Hello everybody, Real World Radio is happy to be doing this special show which is going to evaluate the results of the sixth session of the open-ended intergovernmental working group on transnational corporations and other business enterprises with respect to human rights, which happened from October 26th to October 30th in Geneva, Switzerland. I am very happy to introduce to the people who is going to be speaking in this show, who are Juliette Renaud from Friends of the Earth France and Gonzalo Veron from the Transnational Institute, the TNI. Erika Mendes was supposed also to be joining us today. Erika is from Justice Ambiental, Friends of the Earth Mozambique, but she's facing difficulties with internet, something which is one of the topics that we are talking about now. So first, Gonzalo and Juliette, very welcome to this special show. Very happy that you are joining us today.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for inviting us.
Hello, Jose, Juliette. How are you doing? Nice to be here with you.
Okay, Gonzalo and Juliette, we are the ones who are very happy of being doing this with you both. And I would like to start with any of you, the one of you who prefer to talk about, to give us a short summary of what the binding treaty process is from its very beginning in 2014.
Yes, of course. Well, this is a process that started in 2013, indeed, when the Ecuadorian government decided to push for something that goes beyond the UN guiding principles. The UN guiding principles on business and human rights have been adopted by the UN Human Rights Council and are, as it says in the name, guiding principles that states could follow regarding business and human rights. What is this, business and human rights? Is when TNCs or big companies or companies, due to their operations, end violating human rights in the ground. And that became an issue during the globalization years and the expansion of big transnational corporations all over the world. And then, of course, the Human Rights Council took that as an issue. But the problem is that they move in a non-binding way, meaning that they adopted this UN guiding principle, but those are not binding for states or for companies. And then what the Ecuadorian introduced is the need of having a binding treaty, binding rules at the international level. And in 2013, they released a statement with some 80 other countries or states pledging for the need of such a process. And in 2014, UN Human Rights Council made a resolution that started the process first to explore and the need and how that could be, how a treaty could be, and then starting the negotiations.
Thank you, Gonzalo. First, the discussions were more about the elements that this treaty should have, and then started the negotiations on the treaty itself. What could you explain to us in that sense, Juliette? Thank you.
Yeah, so the process started, the first session was in 2015. And to put it very simply, we could say that the three first years were like a general brainstorming to discuss what would be the main elements that need to have this treaty. So in 2017, there was the release of what we call the elements paper. So completely was the first written basis, but it was not yet in the format of a treaty. And then in 2018, 2019, and now 2020, we are really discussing, debating, negotiating on a draft. So concretely, we are negotiating how should be written this treaty. And this is quite complicated because we need to translate our political ideas, demands into this legal words and legal format. And at the same time, we are trying to push for new things in the law and to make, and so also new concepts that maybe don't exist yet in international law, or sometimes we also have the difficulties that some concepts exist at, in the law of certain states, but not in others. So we need at the same time to adapt ourselves to this legal and technical language, and at the same time trying to push for more and to make progress in this international human rights law. And so this year, 2020, we were discussing on the basis of the second revised draft, which which was prepared by the chair of the process, which is Ecuador. And on the basis, on the previous draft and the previous consultation and session that had happened.
Thank you, Juliet. There was one thing that the global campaign to dismantle corporate power had warned before the negotiations, which was about the difficulties that it could have been that many states, but especially social organizations and social movements, were not going to be able to be in Geneva due to the health crisis of the COVID-19, something which at the end happened during the negotiations. There were people from the organizations and social movements that couldn't really participate as they had planned because of technical issues. What could you tell us about that? And at the same time, we also have to say that the global campaign organized itself in a way that you could have a very important role in all the different discussions during this week of negotiations. Gonzalo, would you like to start with this?
Yeah, sure. As you know, the campaign is a campaign which constituencies are mostly social movements and people affected by the TNCs in the ground, in the territories, no? And then these people is the people that has been mostly impacted by COVID, and they have to adapt to the situation imposed by the COVID emergency. Because it's not only the fact that many of us couldn't travel to Geneva to do what we usually do in October, mobilization and advocacy and so on, but also the fact that our people, the campaign's people, was mostly dedicated to tackle the challenge put by the emergency of COVID and so on. So we released a statement some 2 months before the session, saying that there were no good conditions for a negotiation. Civil society organizations and social movements were not in a good position not only to attend, but also to prepare. That was a huge challenge for us. And in that context, we demanded that the session become a consultation, a moment of consultation, and that would be okay, but not the negotiation, no? Because the negotiation demands also to approach the officials in the corridors and to have bilateral conversations, to assess what people is thinking. And we were afraid. We said, well, they will move forward with a negotiation in a context that is completely full of obstacles to move forward. We were really concerned. But even if civil society claims for adapting this to the circumstances put by the COVID-19 pandemic, they decided to move forward.
It is with great joy that we can say that we have now Erika Mendes from Justicia Mental, Friends of the Earth Mozambique. As we said, she was facing internet difficulties to be able to join the call, something that also Erika suffered during the negotiations. Erika, welcome, very welcome to this Real World Radio special show. And I would like to ask you for your experience last week participating in these negotiations, being part of the global campaign and facing these difficulties to be able to do that. Thank you, Erika.
Thank you very much, Jose, for the kind introduction. I'm glad I managed to join, and I hope my internet allows me to participate in this important discussion. So I was hearing from Gonzalo, and I very much agree that it was a very difficult session with many challenges. I think many of us faced connection issues. There were many states that could not deliver their statements because of connection issues, many civil society actors as well. And it's not only about not being able to deliver the statement at the given time, you know. It's about how we are following the conversations, the negotiations, how we manage or we don't manage actually to engage with our governments who are present in the room. And we can also see relevant point I think we need to bring here is that we have seen in many other processes of negotiation that many states from the Global South have been positioning against having virtual negotiations, including African governments and the Africa group itself in previous, for example, some of the World Trade Organization meetings, the Africa group has clearly stated that they were against virtual negotiations. So also this North-South division in terms of where most of the connectivity issues and how these issues really undermine what is expected from a process such as this one. Not only because we are trying to revert accurate, the situation of asymmetry of power. And for that, we really need voices from the Global South, and we need our governments from the Global South to really step up to this responsibility. But also because we need the active engagement of affected peoples, of civil society, social movements. And this has been really, really crucial in this process since the beginning.
Thank you very much, Erica. And I would like to go to the next point on our agenda, which is the roles of the different states. There was a press release after the end of the negotiations from the Global Campaign to Dismantle Corporate Power that you all are part of, in which there were mentioned some countries which played a good role defending the 26-9 resolution, which created this intergovernmental working group which focuses on transnational corporations, and other states that didn't play such a good role, and they have been the ones who have always during this process been against and trying to dismantle the process of these negotiations. Juliet, would you like to start?
Sure. So what we see from the beginning of the process in 2014, really with already the vote of the resolution, is that there is like a north-south divide, with all the states in the north that voted against this resolution. And in the first 3 years, even 4 years of the process, the European Union in particular tried to derail it, tried to stop it, tried to cut the budget of the negotiation, etc. Now, since last year, they have changed a little bit because they are not questioning the process itself anymore, because I think the process is already really now accepted that it is existing, but they are still kind of boycotting it as they are not participating, and they are blocking also the participation of the EU member states. So we have the EU saying that they cannot participate because they don't have a mandate from the European member states to participate and speak on behalf of them. But at the same time, they don't let European member states speak by themselves, saying that they cannot speak because the treaty that is being negotiated is touching issues that are EU competencies. It is really annoying to see that they are still playing the same game, being that the EU, behind the fact that they have no mandate, and the member states that are the one who should give the mandates to the EU and should say to the EU what to do, they are just hiding, saying, okay, but the EU doesn't let us speak, so we cannot speak. So it's a kind of game that they are playing. At the European level, there is a directive that has started to be discussed, and we are quite worried about the level of ambition of what will have this text of this directive. And we know that the EU will use that also to weaken also the content of the treaty itself. And then just one word, but maybe about other bad guys in the bad states in the negotiation. We see a very different approach, for instance, by Russia or China, that are participating a lot, but saying things that are totally against what we propose, and to really kill anything important and binding and ambitious that we would like to have in the treaty.
Yeah, what we see is Russia and China being engaged in the process. But being engaged means that they are putting their ideas, and the ideas not necessarily are our ideas. We know that we are facing a process that is super complicated, because it has a lot of dimensions and aspects that are key for countries. So for instance, the state-owned companies, how do you deal with them? You treat them as a big transnational corporations or not? And that's of their concern, mostly for Chinese. It's not easy, but through these years of negotiation, we identify what we call the guardians of the treaty, that are mostly states that support the process. And among them, we have Namibia, Egypt, Azerbaijan, Palestina, sometimes Algeria, and of course Cuba and Venezuela have been playing a good role among the so-called guardians of the treaty. When I say the guardians of the treaty are states, well, we have South Africa and Ecuador, of course, states that are in favor of the process, but they don't necessarily think the same about content. So that's something that we have to always have in mind. In the case of Latin America, we have some states that are really backing the process, as the ones I mentioned. I could add Bolivia too. And then we have states that are contributing, let's say, with the process. A good surprise for us was the engagement showed by Panama in this session, different from other years. We have also Brazil. Brazil is proposing things in terms of contents, but of course we don't like. And the big problem with Brazil is that they're asking for negotiations without the participation of civil society. And of course, that's not only bad for us as a civil society organization, but also for the process itself. It's not a surprise because of the political situation in Brazil, but it is something that we have to highlight from the participation of Brazil.
Thank you, Gonzalo. Erica, Gonzalo mentioned the key role played by South Africa from the very beginning of this process, but he also mentioned Egypt and Namibia. What could you tell us about the role played by the African countries in this process, and particularly last week?
Yes, I think the role of South Africa is really undeniable since the beginning of the process. It's really important, not only that they sponsored the resolution, but they've been really active in all sessions, bringing concrete proposals and really with some really strong textual proposals to strengthen and to improve the current draft. So it's been really positive. I think this sixth session, maybe I was expecting a bit more from South Africa comparing to previous years. I think they were a bit more silent this year, and this is also got to do with issues of capacity. They've been really challenged by the COVID pandemic, and they've stated that in many international forums. They really participated in the first days, but then throughout the week they became a bit more silent. There are other African states that have been having really positive roles as well in the process. Namibia has been really key as well. They engaged in all the sessions, bringing very substantial proposals. Mozambique as well. They've been in the past few sessions, they've been very solid also with their participation, and with some of the positions are also very similar to the ones we have in the campaign. I think this year we also have the first time that Senegal, for example, took the floor. They have been participating in previous sessions, but this year for the first time they were a bit more vocal, which is positive. We also have Ethiopia, for example, that also took the floor. Senegal, Ethiopia, they're not necessarily very aligned with some of our positions, but nevertheless, it's very positive to see that they have been following the process and they are coming to the negotiations with at least some positions. I think what was also very disappointing this session was that the African group did not deliver a joint statement in the beginning of the session. But I think in general, we can see that some of the states have been engaging solidly. Some of the states have been improving their engagement, and we really need more states to engage with the content, not only to sit in the negotiations, but to bring concrete proposals. And in terms of positions, I think there were really two very strong positions coming from the African region that I would like to highlight, which are very much aligned to what we have been advocating for as Global Campaign, which is the issue of the scope on transnational corporations. As you may know, we have lost the scope focused on transnational corporations, and the treaty now applies to all business. And I think it was very clear that many states from Africa and other parts of the Global South were really advocating for returning to the original scope and to staying loyal to the resolution that really is trying to address transnational corporations and other companies that have a transnational activity. So this was put forward by several African states. And also some African states were also talking about the issue of direct obligations for transnational corporations. And I think this is really key, especially when we see the corporate capture of our governments, how international institutions are also undermining state sovereignty. So having a treaty to reinforce state obligations would not really be very useful. So we really needed to give direct obligations to companies. And we could see some African states bringing this. South Africa, Egypt, even Mozambique were very clear on this. So I think it was really positive.
Thank you, Erica. The Global Campaign has been claiming the importance of the 26-9 resolution, and particularly the focus that it does on transnational corporations. At the same time, there was a very important experience a few days ago in France, where the oil company Total, which is based in France, was judged in this country, in France, for its actions in Uganda. The Global Campaign has been saying that it's important that transnational corporations can also be judged in courts in their countries of origin. Why is that, Juliet? Why is that so important?
Yeah, so in the treaty, as you said, we are defending the core element of why we need this treaty, that it focuses on transnational cooperation because they are using their transnational character, the fact that they are organized through a lot of subsidiaries in different countries with a complex global value chain with subcontractors, providers, etc. They are using that to escape from their responsibilities, to escape from liabilities, using also the weakness of some legal systems in some countries or the corruption that can exist and that they are feeding. That's why we need this focus on transnational cooperation. We are defending the fact that affected people should have the option of suing the companies in different countries. Sometimes it can be for them useful that it is in their own country because it's the closest to them, but sometimes the access to justice in practice not existing. And it is what we see in Uganda. Our Ugandan partners have tried to do some legal action, for instance, against the Ugandan state about this project and other things. And they don't manage to obtain justice and remedies for the communities. And that's why we have launched this lawsuit in France, because it is in France that the decisions are taken by the parent company, by Total. It is in France that Total has its main assets. And so that's why we think that the parent company or the outsourcing company, the main one, what we call like the multinational, should be the one responsible. And that's why it is something that we are defending in the treaty. But the treaty for this focus on transnational cooperation also needs other elements, for instance, to enforce this mechanism of liability of the parent company in case of a human rights violation committed by its subsidiaries or subcontractors. For instance, we are demanding for provision about the joint and solidary responsibility of these different entities and other elements. And we also need other things in the treaty to fight against this corporate impunity. For instance, elements against the corporate capture. It means the fact that we witness, and this is in every country in the world, even in the country in the north, the power of the private sector lobbies that are doing anything they can to prevent new regulation, new binding laws from being passed or weaken them. And this is what we have had in France with this law that has been adopted, and it is far from perfect because of the attack of the lobbies. And that's also why we are asking for this direct obligation that Erica was mentioning, because we know that we will lose a lot if all the implementation of the treaty goes only through the states passing laws to adapt the treaty in their national legal framework.
Yes, and related also to what Juliet was saying is what we can see from the current draft is that it's still very weak in terms of enforcement mechanisms. So the global campaign has been demanding that international court on TNCs is established. On the current draft and comparing to the previous draft, really nothing has improved in this regard. We still don't have an international judicial mechanism to ensure that the treaty is effectively implemented. And we think this is really a crucial issue.
Thank you, Erica. Gonzalo, the global campaign is saying that the due diligence concept and also the concept of responsible business conduct are not enough.
What these laws ask is that they make plans to avoid committing abuses or human rights violations. And that's it. I mean, if they don't do that, they will be penalized. Nothing is said about the violation per se. What if the violation happens? And that's the big gap of this due diligence law. Is more on preventing than in sanctioning, let's say, what happened once the violation is committed. So in a way, it's easy for big companies mostly to spend some dollars to have a due diligence plan to pay a consultant, and they have that and that's it. They follow the law, but nothing is said about the violation process. That's why for us it's okay. I mean, who could oppose to that? Of course, but it's kind of not helping to solve the real problems.
So just to clarify, the French law is not exactly due diligence. It goes further, as the issue, as I was explaining, Gonzalo, that due diligence is just an obligation to create, to elaborate procedures, so things on the paper that they will do. The difference with what we have in the French law is that they have the duty to implement implement effectively the measures. And most of all, there is also this mechanism that Gonzalo was speaking, in that the companies can be held liable not only for a default of prevention, but also in the case of a harm, of a concrete violation that has happened. The problem that we are facing now, and as I was saying, we have lost a lot in the French text when we were debating it because of the pressure of the lobbies. What we have is that the burden of the proof is still lying on us, on the community, on an affected community. So it's still very hard to prove, because you need to prove that there has been a violation. You need to prove that there is a link between the what has done the company and the violation. You also need to prove the relation of control between the parent company and the subsidiary, etc. So it's a lot. And all these elements, this evidence, these are mainly things, information that the companies are having and that we cannot have access to. This is what I was saying about the European directive, that is more focused on this due diligence, even not as ambitious as the French law. And the other problem with due diligence is that it's usually only an obligation of means and not results. So if the company managed to prove that they have done anything that they could, they can escape from liability.
Thank you very much, Juliet. I would like to ask you, Gonzalo, something which has also been underlined several times by the global campaign to dismantle corporate power, which is why is it important to include the global value chains of transnational corporations in these negotiations?
Yeah, the most easy way of explaining this is the famous Rana Plaza disaster that we all know what happened there. In this accident, that is a whole building of small producers of clothes that were for the big brands, and the big brands not being responsible. That's why we say that it's completely needed that we include the global value chains clearly in the treaty.
Yes, and on this point that Gonzalo was making, I think it's really important that we understand that it is behind their complex structures that these transnational corporations are really finding ways to evade their responsibility. So, for example, when we have violations happening because of Val activities here in Mozambique, and in case we are very successful to bring a case to the domestic courts and really access justice and remedy and reparation, the maximum we would get would be the subsidiary, which is Vale Mozambique. So I think it's really important that we make sure that there is a proportionate liability of all the actors in the global value chain, and that they are held responsible for these violations. If they are profiting, there are shareholders, if there are mother companies who are profiting from the coal extraction here in Mozambique, and that extraction is resulting in human rights violations, then of course they should be held liable. So we need to have access to the financial structures of these transnational corporations. We need to pierce the corporate veil. We need to really go, as Juliet was saying, challenges to really access the kind of information that only these TNCs have. So this treaty should really move one step further in terms of having this joint or solidary responsibility of all actors who are involved.
Thank you, Erica. The Global Campaign said that it reaffirms its faith and commitment in the binding treaty process that will face still many more threats against the spirit and scope of the Resolution 26-9. So I would like to ask you, Juliet, if I can start with you, what are the next steps and what do you think is very important now for the Global Campaign and this process on the binding treaty? Thank you, Juliet.
Well, the route will still be long. We know that. So that's why we need to stay firm in our demands. We know that the opposition is very huge because we are attacking very important economic interests of some of the biggest transnational companies, huge interests of some states also. The challenge is to keep the process alive, to keep it advancing, but also to keep it advancing in a good way, in the sense that we don't want to end up with a treaty that would be very weak and that would just have the name of the binding treaty but wouldn't have the contents that is needed to put an end to this corporate impunity. Of course, the other thing very important that needs to guide us is that stay very connected to the people, to the communities, to the workers that are directly affected, because the risk also is to get lost in these very legal and technical debates. I think the main role of the Global Campaign were a social movement. I directly part of the coalition, and affected people are directly part of it. And so we shouldn't lose sight of that.
Thank you, Juliet. Gonzalo, would you like to jump in?
Yeah, this session, as we saw before, it was just a consultation. We were a little bit upset with the chair because it took so long, 5 days of following this in such a difficult situation with people from all over the world waking up at 5 a.m. to follow the negotiations and so. The negotiation didn't happen. Indeed, what I could say that they negotiated was how to proceed. And still there is a structural challenge. And that is how a negotiation would be in this new normal of mostly hybrid negotiations. So many challenges in terms of procedure, but also, of course, many challenges in terms of content, since what we see is a treaty moving into a traditional human rights treaty that gives all responsibility to states, while we were demanding responsibilities or obligations to companies, an improved role of the international law and international jurisdiction, and so on and so forth. So let's see what happens.
Thank you, Gonzalo. And Erica, you couldn't be at the beginning of the show due to the internet difficulties, but you are having the chance of closing it now. Please, thank you, Erica.
Thank you, Jose. What a responsibility. Just to add on what Juliet and Gonzalo were very brilliantly explaining, I think as civil society, we really need to stay very vigilant, as we have been doing for all the past years, in terms of which directions this process is going. We really cannot accept just any treaty. We need really this to be a step further in terms of regulation of big business. And we need to be very aware that there are really many challenges in order to have a strong and effective treaty. So we must make sure that our governments are representing us at the UN. And I think a very crucial thing that we must ensure is that we need to keep on demanding that this process is protected from corporate capture. So not only in the implementation of the treaty, but even in the negotiations themselves, we have been witnessing private sector representatives bringing very problematic positions to the negotiations and even making some subtle threats and intimidation in terms of what could be the economic impacts of this treaty on, for example, underdeveloped economies. So I think we really need to be vigilant, to be aware that it will always be very challenging to have the treaty we want, but we really need to continue fighting for it. And to do that, I think the very crucial point is that what we have been doing as Global Campaign, which is to bring our demands really based on our local struggles, on the experiences that we are having on the ground when we are trying to access justice, when we are trying to hold a corporation accountable for what they are doing in our territories. So the binding treaty process itself could seem like a very faraway process happening at the UN. And so it might be difficult sometimes to, you know, to build a movement at national level advocating for a strong treaty. But in reality, when we really look at what the treaty is aiming to address, it is really connected to what we are working at national level, to those what social movements have been advocating for, and how we are trying to deal with the overlapping of the crisis that we are experiencing. So I think it's really crucial that we continue to do it based on all the difficulties, all the challenges, all the impunity that we are witnessing on the ground, and building our movements on that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Erica. It was Erica Mendes from Justicia Ambiental, Friends of the Earth Mozambique. We also had during this show Gonzalo Berón from the Transnational Institute. Gonzalo is based in Brazil. And Juliette Renaud from Friends of the Earth France. To the three of you, thank you very much for your time to be able to participate and give your comments on this new round of negotiations of the UN on the binding treaty on transnational corporations and human rights.
Thank you, Jose, and
thank you, Justin.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Jose, and all. It was our pleasure.